Hey guys, welcome to episode 272 of the podcast. Listen, this is a little out of character. It's off the beaten path. I'm sure there's a series of terms that would work much better under these circumstances. But basically, as you'll hear from the episode, this is all like sort of current events, thinking out loud, puzzling through some of the just kind of nuanced confusion that I personally have felt over some of the things that have happened the last few months with regards to,
look,
there's been a lot in social media about various people doing various bad things. So you get the idea. In terms of shout outs, want to thank everybody who was a part of SF Sketchfest. My partners, David Owen and Cole Stratton, are extraordinary, very, very special, very awesome staff. And the amazing performers and the audience that continue to show up year after year. I can't believe we've had 17 of those things. I'm just sort of circling back home and trying not to get sick because it's sort of a tradition, and taking care of business, both personal and professional. So I hope everyone's doing well. And a couple of people had sort of asked me to weigh in on some of the things that have been going on in the world. And I really have tremendous respect for Eliza and for just kind of the way she puts her feelings out into the world. And so I wanted to have her as a sounding board and also to hear sort of how she was feeling about stuff. I found this to be a very satisfying conversation. She's terrific. And I hope you enjoy it too. I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay, listen. First of all, we're just going to get right into it, which we already did.
Okay.
Because we already were like, I don't even know how we got started on that topic. It's just, it was that organic.
Yeah.
It was that organic. Oh, yeah. It was a cold clusterfest thing. One thing I do want to say is that I vacuumed in here. I've been gone. I've been out of town. Someone else was house sitting. They're great. But I think that I don't know what they were doing with the dogs, but there was just a lot of like debris everywhere.
Dog bits.
A lot of dried mud and like, hey, listen, I'm glad they're getting some exercise. But before you were coming over, I freaked out and vacuumed. But then the vacuum has inside it, it's like a Pandora's box of like old dog stink.
Mm-hmm,
so mm-hmm. When I run the vacuum, you're getting two things. You're getting a clean floor
and a
cloud stink.
Of stink. Yeah,
so
yeah,
I
yeah.
hope I try to clear out the stink as I could.
I don't notice a thing.
But I was very aware of
but
it.
But I am familiar with
I was
that.
Panicking like I was in an Oscar Wilde play, like wafting the air with my hands. Like, oh, Eliza's coming over.
I've done that with changing the litter box.
Yeah.
Because when you pour the new litter in, you get a little cloud.
Yeah, there's a literal cloud. There's a figurative and literal cloud.
The litter dust.
Yeah.
And that's not, and it's not a dirty smell, but it is a awful smell.
Uh-huh.
So.
And also like once you associate two smells with each other, a clean smell becomes dirty. Like there are certain bathroom deodorizers that I feel like I now would rather smell shit because
it's
the two. Yeah, exactly. Don't lie to me because I can still smell the shit, but now I'm associating vanilla with shit.
Exactly. You've
forever.
Got to tell and it's vanilla.
Yes.
So just come out with it. Be straight with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you couldn't smell anything. So we immediately just somehow got right into the, when we were younger, getting pulled right into the like hot girl roles that we both agreed we just were doing kind of sarcastically, which wasn't doing anyone any favors.
And they're also never funny. I mean, it even still comes up where they're like, yeah, we want a funny girl. And I'm like, yeah, but did you really look at this script?
Where are the
because
jokes?
It's mostly me looking, being a straight man for some cuckoo cachoo
right
next to me.
Right.
So I like you don't want me to be funny. The reason that models are getting these parts is because they're written for models. Like, and that also bugs me coming up in comedy, feeling like when dudes would pop and then get their own show, then their girlfriends would all be hot models. And I'm like, what about the girls who came up with you writing those sketches and doing all those shows? Like, and what about the women watching this in the audiences who are excited? Like, oh yeah, this is so weird. This is my weird comedy vibe. And oh, that's what I'm supposed to look like to live in that world.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I think, I mean, that's the part of what, like, where everything sort of, like, those, all of those things, all of those ways we're socialized, including, you know, straight guys who were the funny ones. Part of it isn't their fault either, because, like, they were so socialized to feel they couldn't and they wouldn't date those girls that there's this weird sort of comeuppance that's like, well, mm-hmm. this is my chance. I'm yeah. getting back at everybody by dating this girl.
Yeah. And this is my, this and is this my is, sign of this success.
This is my sign of success. And so... Yeah. Yeah, I would like seeing that happen too. Is there is a feeling of like, oh, God, I'm not like, I guess I'm mad at everyone. I'm mad yeah. at me. I'm mad at you. Like, I'm sort of mad all over because.
I mean, mostly mad at the networks. They're mm-hmm. the ones who really put, like, because who knows? In half of those decisions, the funny girls could have been put up for it. And the network was like, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying I got hired when I was young for a prank show.
Prank show.
I shouldn't have told it that way. I should have been like, I auditioned for it, so like everyone would yeah. be like, oh gosh, is she gonna get the part?
Suspense.
But you know, okay, I did get a part, but he yeah. but that's not all. So the breakdown for every character was very hot.
Yeah,
so it was like art dealer who is very hot in a bikini,
neurosurgeon, like the, extremely hot,
and in a bikini. Yeah. Like, not yeah. only were they, was it about how hot they were, but they all needed to just like accidentally suddenly be in bikinis. Yeah. And so I picked the one, and you to go in and audition for it. You got to pick which part you were going to audition for, and I picked the one that didn't have anything yeah. in it. It was a girl in a panda suit, and I was like, perfect. That's the most
that.
Clothes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I went in and was a total weirdo and booked it. And I was like, oh, that's great. They like me being weird. I get to wear a full panda suit. Like, I don't have to fuck around with trying to turn somebody on. Great.
Yeah.
And then I get to set the day before we shoot. We're like running through things and they're like, okay, here's your panda suit and here's your bikini set for when you take it off. And I was like, my what?
Oh,
and they're like, your bra and panties for when you take off the
oh my God.
The suit and you're just in a bra and panties for the rest of the show. And I was like,
oh my God, it's a sketch. It's a terrible right? sketch.
And I was like, yeah, I was like, I don't know how, like in my early 20s at somewhere. And I remember being in the bathroom of this little staging area, just looking at myself in the mirror, like, are you going to do this? It does not, it's never how you want to be. Like, right. I never want to be just hanging out in a bra and panties. That yeah. is not me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't even shave my legs for that. Like, I did not know.
Yeah, I tried to get the most panda possible. So yeah. I didn't shave my legs on purpose. Yeah, to be
I needed
more furry.
To be exactly furry. I was eating eucalyptus. Is that them? I don't know. I think that's one of the other weird bears. But so, bamboo. I was eating bamboo.
There you go. There you go. There you
thank
go.
You. And I came out of the bathroom and was like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I can't. I can't, you did not tell me this. You didn't tell me I was going to be wearing this. I wouldn't have taken the part. I can't do this. And the director was like, oh God. Okay. All right. Well, this is fair enough. I didn't tell you. Yeah. Okay, fine. That's on me. I should have told you.
Oh,
but
wow.
Now this is the problem. So what's the solution? You have to give me a solution.
Oh my God.
I can't. What's your fix?
Right.
And I was like, I wear the panda suit. And he was like, no. And I was like, I wear the panda suit with a tank top under it. I take off the top part and fold that around my waist. So I'm panda waist
exactly
down,
what
tank
I would
top,
exactly
waist up. And
what
he was like, ugh, fine. And and there was a gang of us that were the girls in animal suits that end up being hot girls.
Uh-huh.
Was the narrative I did uh-huh. not know. And that gang of girls was me and three models.
Oh,
and I was like, why
God.
Not just get a fourth model?
Yeah, yeah.
Why, like, either get a fourth model or get around the idea that maybe there's something besides them being hot that we can yeah. add to this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, that was a bad prank show.
That really is those, I mean, like, so... And just to backtrack for a second for you guys, this is not a re-release of Eliza's episode, and I don't usually have people on more than once. We talked about this exact same
story. Oh, no.
But because everything that has happened, particularly in the last few months, I have had very complicated feelings about and have not really said anything about, not that anyone's been like pounding my door. It's not like they're like, we rely on you to have commentary for, you know, like Harvey Weinstein or whatever. But it is something that like behind closed doors, mm-hmm. I've sort of had conversations about it and had sort of felt like, then I sort of started to feel stuck between like, well, I don't want to not seem like I have an opinion at all, but I also don't feel comfortable expressing it on Twitter. It's just not, that's just not the way I have decided to have a relationship with social media. And it's really very selfishly for my own like sanity.
Well, I think it's also smart. I mean, I tried expressing some things on Twitter and had to delete a lot because I'm like, well, that doesn't fully say it. And right. This is not the right way to try to get it across in 140, now 280 characters. These are way too complicated for that.
And I'm not gonna. And then there was like, when it turned out that there was a thing that was like a rant or whatever, mm-hmm. it was like, oh, so I can just continue one thought for seven tweets, and then that's my like mission statement, mm-hmm. or whatever. Then I'm not saying that I haven't read other people's and been like, oh, well said, like good, you've really used this to its maximum potential. But I don't trust myself, or maybe I do trust myself, but I'm just not interested in doing that. Yeah, so
I do think it's just a tricky place to try to get across a complicated thought.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that I thought of you was that, you know, Anna Field's book, The Girl on the Show, she quoted you so much, and when I was reading it, I was like, God, I really agree with like this is all great. I feel like when she interviewed me, by and large, I was just like. Women in comedy are great. Like, I don't know that I had anything really that spectacular to say. So I just really appreciated your perspectives and stuff. And then when I was, you know, knowing you were coming up to Sketchfest, so I was seeing your name a lot as we were readying all of the materials for the festival and all that kind of junk. I was like, well, maybe I should see if Eliza wants to just come and just talk with me about it on the podcast and talk about more contemporary stuff, which I don't as often plan on doing. That was like spurning off one very specific statement about all of this. This is what I would say is that I certainly did have people, less so people in our industry that I know, but more people who aren't as familiar with the industry, mm-hmm. and assume that I might have the same kind of experience, mm-hmm. as, you know, all of these actresses, mm-hmm. that have had to do what God knows what, or all, you know, be told they should do. And my answer is usually like, yeah, I mean, like I've had a couple of sort of shitty things happen, but like nothing, like I don't exist in a world where I feel like that is put upon me on any given day, and for me I'm much more a part of like all of the sort of subtext, mm-hmm. that's present a lot, but I have also tried really hard to be optimistic and not quit and instead be like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of changes, like I'm seeing a lot of really different, more diverse, you know, less, the expectation is less on, you know, physical stuff and more on talent, like I've seen those things transpiring. And so I, by virtue of just doing this and deciding not to be like, well, I'm going to fuck off and go back to San Francisco because this is exactly what I was afraid of, mm-hmm. That I would go, you know what? There's a lot of great stuff about this. And it's not as bad as I feared it would be when I first started having experiences like that. You know what I mean? So like, that's like, the sort
just
of...
Just in entertainment.
In entertainment, okay. Yeah. Like feeling like, oh, I'm seeing some of these things. But for example, like... I never had anybody say, you know, I mean, if you just lose 5 pounds, you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. I wasn't like rail thin like other people around me or whatever. So I felt like I felt like I came in to a better experience than I was anticipating. And I've tried to kind of hold on to that all the way through. So no, I don't have a situation where, you know, I was cornered by someone and they stuck their tongue down my throat so that I could get apart, you know, or they tried to for that reason or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I do think that, I mean, obviously that stuff does happen in comedy. It's sounding like it happens even more frequently in just general, you know, movies and entertainment. I think that women in comedy we have a mouthiness that comes along with us that makes us a little bit more precarious as a target think, to a lot of people who are looking for targets.
Not that
I feel like anything, saying anything in that world at all, sometimes comes off as victim blamey, that like our actions.
Well, that's why, that's part of what all this stuff is going on. It's so fucking confusing.
Yeah.
Like all the Aziz stuff is just, that for me was sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back, because that happened right during Sketchfest.
Right.
And I'm standing in a circle of people and, you know, they're all comedians, and like people who know him, people who don't know him, people who are mad at her, people who are defending her. And I really, I was like, God, this is messy. Fuck, this is a mess.
That, I mean, I don't know if you, I wrote a thing on that I just put on Tumblr, because I was like, I don't want to make money off of this. I don't want anybody to make money off of this.
Yeah.
I'm sure Tumblr, I guess, does, but like, you know. I just think that that story was so, so mishandled.
It was.
That it did not do... It did not do anything good for the victim. It did not do anything good for the cause. The only thing it did something good for was that fucking website that rushed a story out, a very delicate, nuanced story.
Right.
They rushed out because there was they could stick a famous name on it and get a bunch of clicks.
Right.
That, like, I cannot, I there's no way that they could have gone through all of those steps, written that thing, and had the victims or... had her like best intentions in their mind, because that's,
they couldn't have looked at that and been like, yeah, this is great for
her.
Yeah,
this is going to be, this is going to give her what she needs and wants. Cause no, it didn't.
Yeah.
And I think that article really bothers me, because it also, I think will deter more people from coming forward.
Right.
With complicated stories.
Right, right, right.
And the way that they handled the James Franco story in, I guess, the LA Times, those are a lot of very complicated stories, but they waited until they had a little pile of them.
Right.
So they could say, look, take one of these and it's weird and you don't know how you feel about it.
Right.
Take five of them and you're like, oh, okay, something not good is happening here.
Right, right.
Because five different women... were the ones who were brave enough to speak about this publicly, which means there's probably some other ones who didn't want to go
absolutely.
On any record.
Yeah.
And if that, all those people are walking away from this man and situation with a certain feeling, then that's worth looking
attention
to. Yeah. Paying attention to. And you're also not putting any one of them under the microscope.
Right.
You're saying like, look, this is a pattern.
Right. Right.
So that bothers me, and maybe it will lead to more nuanced discussions, because it's the only way to discuss it.
Yeah.
But I do wish that had been handled better.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you. And that was definitely your perspective on it was refreshing to me, because that's exactly how I've been feeling about a lot of this stuff, which is to say, like, I'm not thrilled about, you know, the Catherine Deneuve's of the world. Again, they're sort of like kind of trying to address the nuance, but not. But again, it's like, oh, this is not like, who gets to discuss this anymore? And that kind of, it's hard too, because like, I don't want, like,
and what are you discussing it for?
And what are you discussing it for? And who are you protecting? What are you, but the nuances, like, it's so much is in that. But at the same time, I completely understand groups of people who are like, fuck nuance. That's what's gotten into, you know, that's what has us in trouble all these years. Like, nuance has explained everything away. And I completely understand that. But it's still really hard. It's just very hard to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, on the one hand, as comics, we are very well trained to detect nonverbal signals. We can detect nonverbal signals in a room of 200 people. Or if you're the type who plays, say, Madison Square Garden, hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands. I don't know what it seats.
Right, I don't either.
But you can detect that many nonverbal signals and take a room and shift it to some place else. But I know that because I'm a comic, and that's... And having gone through that myself, I'm like, wait, I know that I have this special skill. And so I know these guys have this special skill. And so I'm looking at them in a different way than a lay person.
Right.
And then again, a lay person is looking at them with their their reputations for being very socially conscious and very feminist and feeling very betrayed. Whereas I, as a peer, I'm not really looking at them that way because yeah. I've known them long enough that I've seen their opinions come and go.
Right.
So I don't feel betrayed mm-hmm. in the same way that I think a lot of people do, mm-hmm. but I also feel a little professional, like, hey, wait a minute. You can't play the bumbling dum-dum.
Right.
Because I know this is something that you really do know something about.
Right.
In order
right.
to complete your job, you have to know something right. about this.
Well said.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a note from someone kind of asking me how I felt about all of this. And it was from a straight white guy who identified himself thus mm-hmm. and said, you know, I have spent my life feeling that I was victimized by an older girl, like an older girlfriend that I dated when I was young and I wasn't ready to do stuff. And I feel, I felt violated by her. I felt like she pressured me into doing things that I wasn't ready for. And I felt, excuse me, what I could identify with was what started to come to light with women. I've always identified with women in that way because I was like, however I carried myself, my relationship with that woman kind of dictated choices that I've made since and fears that I've had and all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, it's just I absolutely know I'm not allowed to identify. Like he felt aware that he was like, yeah. And I just thought, God, that would be so hard right now to be a straight white male who identifies more with the person who is accusing the straight white males of the world of doing certain things. And that was to me like a perfect little like personification of nuance. Like, oh, this poor kid, like now he somehow feels like everyone's looking at him, so to speak, as the bad guy. But this is the absolute wrong time for him to be like, me too.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's like, shut up. You've got it great in so many other ways. Look at the color of your skin. Shut up.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, first of all, I do think that we can, as white women, process some of our empathy with them, with feeling like we are white people who don't agree with and support the behavior of a lot of white people. There's pretty much enough white people that's like what we're known for.
Right.
You know, and I can't say, no, we're not. Like, right, no, right. Yeah, I see the numbers. I get it. Yeah, they are. And that doesn't mean that I am. That means that they are. But it also means that it's time for me to adjust where my standing on all of those things in terms of not like my point of view, but in terms of stepping back a little bit and using my privilege and platforms to give other people a spotlight. And I think that that's something that you can do not just as a performer, but just as a human being in a right. room. I mean, like a simple thing as a writer in writers' rooms, women's ideas very often get talked over or get repeated by a man who then the man gets the praise for it.
Really,
like,
it's true.
It's a cliche, but it is so true. And what's nice is when you work with guys who make a point to not do it and make a point to clear a path when they see it happening.
Yeah.
And they're not doing it to like get a pat on the back, right. but they're just like, no, the right thing to do is go, hey, Eliza said that, or say, wait, what were you saying, Eliza? What was that idea?
Yeah.
And that's something that you can do in conversations, in classes, and look for things like that, I think, to be like, I want to be a part of this, but I'm not going to be at the top of this pyramid.
Right.
But I can be really supporting from the bottom.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with that more. And that reminds me too of the sort of like the messiness that exists right now with, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, but most people who listen to the podcast at this point, unfortunately, know ad nauseum fault that I do love like crime and justice podcasts, and that is my release. I don't listen mm-hmm. to comedy podcasts because that feels mm-hmm. like not in a bad way, even just like in an excited way, I get tense. It doesn't matter if I'm enjoying it or if I'm not enjoying it. It still tenses me up in mm-hmm. a way that something that absolutely I have very little to do with in life and in work is I can just like, all right, I'm just listening. I'm listening. Yeah. Listening's important.
Yeah.
Was the undisclosed, the sort of special feature that they did on the killing of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, because there was there was a lot of really great, particularly in these, they have like, are you familiar with this podcast?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So I'll just recap for some people, because I know a lot of people kind of have an awareness of it. But so Serial comes out, right? Mm-hmm. It's the biggest podcast of all time,
right,
whatever.
Yes, I remember that one.
Did you ever listen to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you know that Rabia Chowdhury was the person who brought Adnan Syed's case to Sarah. She was mm-hmm. like, I'm still trying to get this solved. I have the boxes in my trunk, blah, blah, blah. She was also an attorney. Serial comes out, and Rabia, being she's a total hero of mine, and she's a very divisive person, but she was like, listen, I like, forevermore, she's like, I will always be indebted to Sarah. I love Sarah Koenig. I love her. I had a real problem with the way she told that story.
Hmm.
She left a lot of really important stuff out. I understand that her relationship to the story became a did he or didn't he, but she's like, I know he's innocent. I know it. And I recognize that other people don't feel that way, and I understand that. But I need the things that were not disclosed, or the things that I feel were kind of bandied about with a will he or, you know, did he or didn't he, that she feels are more black and white than that. And she was like, and she ended up connecting with these two other attorneys that she didn't know, who didn't know each other, but who were both like became very passionate about the research and the legal document side of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up starting this podcast called Undisclosed. And their first season was basically Serial plus like a gajillion piles of documents and legal procedure and mm-hmm. all of these things that Sarah Koenig couldn't have known and couldn't have gotten to in the period of time she committed to do it. But it really sucked me in, because turns out I'm real interested in like legal process. I'm fascinated by the weird, flexible, inflexible, like, just, God, this is a great system. God, this is a fucked up system. Like, there's just the whole quandary of that. And if I were a lawyer, I would have like had a heart attack by now, because not having a legal degree, I'm still like, this is very upsetting to me. they've made their focus on people that they believe should not be in prison, who mm-hmm. were, you know, convicted of a crime. But in the case of the Freddie Gray stuff, they connected with these journalists who were finding out a lot of stuff that just wasn't making it into the Baltimore Sun, that no one was talking about. And they were like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to do a whole series on this. And they did just hours and hours of analysis on all the security footage, anything they could get their hands on. They went back and re-interviewed all these neighborhood folks who police and journalists just abandoned once they got their whatever the storyline from the police were. They were like, okay, cool. So we don't care about the neighborhood anymore, because now the police are talking. Mm-hmm. So we'll just listen to that. And that's what we'll report on. So they did all of this just in-depth reporting and supporting of the neighborhood and the witnesses, and tried to kind of reconstruct what they really thought could have happened, which is still a huge mystery. But a lot of that, so they do an episode where they're, I'm so sorry that I'm just why. Now all of a sudden I have a podcast that's only about Undisclosed. they one episode a week is, here's us reporting this stuff. And mm-hmm. then the second episode is, here's this community of people talking about this about more. So they would have, you know, a host of that who was from the neighborhood in Baltimore. And then they would bring in, you know, a professor of, you know, racial justice from X university, and this newscaster who blah, blah, blah. And so those would get really tense, because there was a lot
of...
Were
they like all in the same room? Was this like panel
style, or just back and forth interviews? But on the phone. Like, it's panel from but people Skyping or recording from their own studios.
But they're hearing each other. It's one big conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so there was tension there. And tension for me as a listener, as a white listener, feeling this defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And then really having to sit back each time and go, you know what? No one, these people don't know you, and no one is accusing you of being this white person.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking shut up and listen.
Yeah.
Listen. Put your defenses aside and go, let's all assume everyone knows I'm a great person. I don't need to be defensive about that right now. I need to learn, and I need to listen, and I need to stop objecting and going, but I'm not.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, great, fine. Put that away.
I think we're in a real...
Be neutral.
Yeah, I think we're in a real weird position on many different levels in this country and maybe the world, with our relationship between fact and feelings.
Yeah.
Because like in that type of discussion, these are facts. Like, a lot of white people have done these things. That's a fact. we can say white people do these things. That's a fact.
Right.
Another fact is I don't do those things and I don't like those things and I don't believe them. But that's just another fact.
Right.
That doesn't disprove the first one.
Right.
The feeling that gets tense between them is I feel like you're saying I do that. No, no, no. Nobody said that.
Right.
But that also doesn't disprove the fact.
Right.
So it's like we got to like have these nasty facts that don't feel like they add up in front of us and go, okay, well, how do I want to position my life and myself in light of these things that are just true?
Right.
No matter how much I don't like them, they are true.
Yeah.
And like even with our, with the relationship between yourself and an artist that you like, say an R. Kelly for me. Mm-hmm. The facts are he has done terrible things to women, very young women, to girls. And that's just that. And my feeling is, but I like his music. Yeah, but that doesn't change the fact. And I think that has made it very difficult for a long time for people to come forward about powerful people because they know these people have all these feelings about Woody Allen, about Brett Ratner, whoever. And so
oh I'm laughing at the idea of someone being like, Brett Ratner is my feminist hero,
but somebody's got to
have, you're totally right.
That dude has done some great stuff. And what have you done?
And money talks.
Yeah.
Money is very important.
So like no matter how much you love something, it doesn't take away some nasty fact behind it. And you know, figure that out for you.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And the other, another piece that sort of comes up with that particular series. Well, it's funny too, because there was this girl in the very beginning, she was one of the main reporters on it. And I kept struggling with her voice and with the fact that she was so, there was no part of her that was trying to present unbiased. And while I understand that was like implicit in, you know, this, they were like, listen, the real story hasn't been told. For some reason, I would just get uncomfortable with how she expressed her frustration, which was to be very sarcastic in this very specific way, where she would be like, "So I asked the police officer what he thought about that, and he said he didn't have an opinion." Yeah, you don't have an opinion, and I was like, "Oof, that feels unprofessional to me." Like,
yeah.
Oof, her reporting of this feels somehow unprofessional. And then as time wore on, particularly when they did a conversation where it was really her getting to be her and not reading what she had prepared as part of her reporting of the story, that I came to kind of like, I completely did a 180. I was like, I've kind of been, I like her reporting. I'm really glad the story's being told. There's something about her that's rubbing me the wrong way. And then when I finally just got to hear her be her, and her voice was quivering with rage because she had experienced this firsthand and been face to face with these people who weren't being listened to, retroactively, it all made so much sense to me. I was like, I forgive it all. I love it all. I love it. She's just really upset because she passionately cares about this. And she is, and she happens to be a white female reporter who's going into these neighborhoods and, you know, able to gain the trust of people who, by all accounts, should not necessarily want to have a conversation with her, given everything that's gone down. And she was another person who was like, we have to shut up and listen. We have to shut up and listen. We don't know everything. And this idea too of like this, what made me think of this was just the idea of being at the bottom of the pyramid, because there's still this sense of like, I support minorities, quote unquote, and I kind of know what's best. So from where I am up on top, I'm going to decide this is where the funding goes. This is how you guys need to organize to be this community of leaders who blah, 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 rather than stepping back and going, I don't know what's best for this neighborhood.
Yes.
I do not know. And your job is to tell me how I can support you, but you lead me.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
I think that's a very new position for a lot of people. And it's and it doesn't feel comfortable at first. And that doesn't mean that it's wrong.
Right.
Like if you're in a position with all of this stuff, if you're in a position that makes you feel uncomfortable, or you hear something that makes you feel uncomfortable because it's challenging and it's challenging your idea of who you are, that's not necessarily a bad thing. it might just be something that you have to sit with and kind of get used to. And the idea of being at the bottom of a pyramid instead of the top, I don't know why I said it that way, but we're using it.
We're in full food pyramid / cheerleader mode.
It doesn't mean that that pyramid is your whole life. Right. We got lots of different pyramids.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So yes. I feel like a lot of people are also like, hey, wait a minute. So I'm worthless now? Like, no. You just have a different position in this discussion.
Yeah.
There's some discussion that you're the most important person for.
Well said.
Your personal life, for instance, but this other thing that's about this other group of people that you're actually not a member of. Yeah. You can't be at the top of that.
Right.
You'll get your chance.
Yeah.
But that's not this one.
Yeah, you know? I do know. Absolutely.
So yeah, I think that's something that just feels very different. We don't, these new feelings feel bad. Yeah. And we're like, there's gotta be something wrong here.
And it's scary. And even things that our brains tell us are positive, that, and that holds true for our personal lives as well as sort of our lives at large as a part of a larger society, that change is scary. That's not a new thing. Everyone knows that change is terrifying.
It's a different experience, I think, when you actually feel it.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, when you're not the person pushing forward a specific agenda, saying I feel this way and I know that how I've been treated is wrong and I want this to advance, and instead you're part of the quote unquote problem. Mm-hmm. That does, it feels very, very different than when you can sort of stand proud and go like, well, I know I'm the best of this situation, you know. Yeah. There just needs to be more of me.
Yeah. I had a feminist male friend asked me a few years ago, he's like, yeah, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. Am I supposed to say things or am I supposed to not, because it's not my place and women should say things. I was like, well, if there's women around, yeah, but if there's not, if you're in a space where you have more power or there it's only men, then yeah, you can say something. You can say, I don't like that and here's why, and model behavior as a man who doesn't participate in that stuff. Because I think, I mean, the patriarchy has done such a number on women, but also such a number on men.
Right.
And what they're supposed to be to be a real man, like that they're supposed to be aggressive and shitty to women. Like, that's, a lot of men were taught that's part of being a good man.
Right.
In a weird, twisted way.
Yeah.
So they need help figuring out a new idea of what a man is, that they can be like, yeah, that's who I want to be.
Right.
I want to be a guy like that. So if you can model that behavior for your dude friends when they're telling shitty jokes, that helps. Right. Just being like, yeah, I don't think that's funny, but you know what is funny? This joke about a skeleton.
Right.
These jokes about skeletons are always funny and they don't hurt anyone because we're all skeletons. We're all skeletons.
I hear what you're saying.
You're skeletons with meat.
Ugh, there's a great Ray Bradbury story that is about a guy who's obsessed with the fact that he has a skeleton inside. It's like one of the first stories I ever read where I started to recognize the idea of mental illness and going like, boy, that actually like really resonates for me on some level. Like I'm very able to understand this idea of somebody who cannot let go of the idea that there's a skeleton inside them. And in fact, he hires someone to get rid of it. Like he's so sick that he hires a strange little man who can get rid of his problem. And then he's just like a living pile of like tissue and
a
living blob.
I love blob stuff.
Skeletons inside. Shout out to the skeletons inside us all. One of the things that I think, and again, like I would get so upset when I would start reading stuff that I just sort of tuned it out. But when the kind of Harvey Weinstein stuff was happening, which now feels like it was a million years ago, part of the conversation that I think would sort of get edged around, and that I think people like, Catherine Deneuve were maybe trying to get at, but in a way that ended up maybe not being helpful, was this idea of like, it becomes the sort of woman versus woman thing. And like, if you're a feminist, when do you stop supporting other women's choices to say or do X? If it's like how do you as an individual look at an action of a fellow woman and determine like, well, that's anti-feminist, but that is feminist, but that's your opinion. So in that way, I want you to be entitled to it, but you're not advancing a cause. The sort of idea of like, well, what about the woman who's like, oh yeah, I fucked Harvey yeah, I fucked him. Who cares? Like, that's part of what I signed up for. I don't care. I don't feel any disrespect for myself about using sex to get a job.
Then there's no issue. There's no issue with that person. You were offered something, you agreed to it and took it. There's nothing inherently bad about having sex with Harvey Weinstein. I don't want to ever be quoted on that.
I'm sure somehow that's the only thing that
would
come
bad
away from
is being forced to when you don't want to,
right?
Or feeling like you're not only your livelihood but entire life thereafter rested on your decision to right. do that. So yeah, you can.
But don't you feel like there are women who would say, yeah, but you knew that that was part of a patriarchy, and you knew that if you said yes, you might be inciting someone else to feel they have to say yes because it worked that way for you. You know what I'm saying? This is where it just gets so complicated to me.
In a religious studies class that I took in high school, we talked about religious freedom and how to respect other religions, basically, ethically. And I forget which philosopher who came up with this sort of thing, but basically it just boiled down to, as long as your beliefs and practices are not harming anyone else, they're fine.
Right.
And I think that holds with this kind of stuff. So if it's someone saying, as a woman, here's how I want to live, fine. If it's someone saying, as a woman, here's how every other woman should have to live, that's not okay. If it's, as a woman, this is how every other woman should be allowed to live, should she want to, mm-hmm. then that is, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if your opinions on women are shutting down other women in any way, that's not okay. And right. And we also, I think, run into a bunch of stuff on with this call out culture online, where if you have any kind of dissenting opinion, people will just leap on you and tear right. you apart instead right. of it being allowed to say, like, yeah, you know what, I don't agree with these things, and that's just me. Like, if a Twitterer is not a person in a position of power necessarily, right. although there's one, right. There's a few. So just because someone says something doesn't mean that we need to tear it apart and for the sake of society. Because, like, who is this person? They're right. not making any rules. They're not making any laws. Right. They just said a weird thing. They can say that. They can think that.
Yeah.
They can sit in their car and go through a drive-thru. And also they can think that.
The thing that's terrifying to me, and this is like become such a, I'm like, I look forward to the time where I, and this will probably never happen, where I'm not as so painfully aware still every day that, you know, the internet changed everything.
Yeah.
But I unfortunately am part of that, like, very specific generation of 10 years, you know, 10 years on either side or whatever you want to think of it as, where, like, a lot of my formative years did not contain the internet. And I only got it when I was almost out of school and, you know, mm-hmm. so I, unfortunately, it's like when half your life-ish, happens without it, it's so hard not to have these conversations, particularly on the JV club, where it's like, oh my God, if there had been the internet and cameras back then, like, my boobs would probably be everywhere. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing is what is what's scary to me is that the idea that you, the idea of internet ghosts, the idea that you're haunted forever by mm-hmm. things you express or things you say. And because I want to be someone who engenders conversation, and that you may not know that what you feel is not ethical mm-hmm. or moral. That gets a little confusing too. Like, there's some sort of higher thing, and then there's like the mores of a culture, but you may not know unless you say, and then you learn, and then you help others learn. And that conversation is really important for that reason. But if you express something and it ends up online, then you're haunted by that forever. So maybe you just don't say anything ever, or maybe, you know, because you're not allowed to change your mind. You're not allowed to say, I really didn't know, or I was in a totally different place in my life when I said that. And now I feel completely differently. And I'm proud to say that I feel differently. Like, that, I think my relationship to things living forever in a way that my parents didn't experience, mm-hmm. I guess I'm wondering what somebody who's just now turning 19, for example, what they feel about their openness. And is that just part of it where you're like, yeah, I know. Look, I'm going to say something and then I'm going to get beaten up for it. And then later I'm going to say something else and then people will accept that. That's just how the internet works. Or are people like, I'm not going to say or do anything permanent?
they feel very differently than we do. And part of that is growing up with the internet, but part of it is also being young. And when you're young, you think you know so much more than you do. Let me rephrase that. When I was young, I thought I knew so much more than I did. And I think that's true for a lot of people.
Right.
And that combined is like, look, I know the rules of the internet and you don't, old people. And there's a little of that that's like, well, yeah, you do. You've grown up with it in a different way than I have. So you for sure click into things much quicker than right. I do. But I've been alive long enough to see how long these ripples will ripple.
Right, right.
To see how long things can haunt you and how different they look in the light of a couple years later.
Right.
And there's wisdom to be gained from that point of view also.
Yeah.
Because yeah, they're like, I don't understand why we can't. I've seen a lot of younger women be like, I don't understand, if somebody did this to me, why can't I just call them out online? And I'm like, well, you can, but a bunch of other stuff is going to happen to you when you do that. People are going to want you to talk about to say more. They're going to want you to go on the record. They're going to want to use your story. Like this woman did. I mean, that girl had tweeted about Aziz, and that's kind of how they found her, I believe. And then drew this story and convinced her to do this story and drew it out of her. You're just signing up for a lot more when you're that transparent with everything. And there are some cards that you may want to hold closer and decide how you lay those out and where you do and what sort of support you have when you do it. It's certainly not, like, my feeling is certainly not, don't share your things and don't you keep it to yourself, but it's just you can make more decisions with how you put things out than just laying them out constantly on Twitter or whatever your social media of choice is.
Yeah.
I mean, even down to like, I have friends who go through breakups and then will have their emotional feelings on social media. And I'm like, all of those feelings are right and what you should be feeling. And I know that this is the place where you kind of live here on the internet, but also the people that you want to date next, they're on this website too.
Yeah.
The guy or girl who you broke up with, they're on here too, but I'm not even concerned about their feelings because they did what they did.
Uh-huh.
But for you, you may not want to create this legacy and have this be who you are, to people who don't really know you.
Yeah.
Cause you can say all those things face to face to a friend, whether it's breakup stuff, complicated opinions, whatever, but they also know you and can process it that way. Right. It's not just one little nugget that goes out on its own in the internet and that's what you're known for.
Yeah.
It's a weird, tricky place.
Yeah.
It's not simple.
Yeah.
Just flashed to the reality of like someone the other day said like, oh, I read on your Wikipedia page that da da da. And I was like, for some reason, had forgotten that there would be a Wikipedia page on me. And I was like, oh, does it say that? I don't know. And they're like, oh, do you not go and check your Wikipedia? And I was like, no, I've never looked at a Wikipedia page. I'm sure I'd be horrified at the information that's on there. So there is this kind of, maybe that's people who not necessarily even are the same age as me or even necessarily have had the same relationship to the internet that I have chronologically, but maybe that's like, maybe I'm a specific kind of person and there are many of us who are like, oh yeah, I'm going to put all of this stuff out into the world that's very personal, but then I'm just going to pretend it's not there. I don't want to know about someone in some room somewhere talking about what they know about me. I'm just going to pretend like that's not something I have to worry about.
I mean, I definitely have a lot of that. Like I'll suddenly be in a situation where I'm on a talk show or something and they're like, well, since, and list all these bizarre facts about me. And I'm like, how did you know that? And they'll be like, oh, well, we listened to all these podcasts that you did. And I'm like, oh yes, I just talk like I'm in a room with a friend. Not like there's as many people as want to listening for forever.
Yeah.
But it's also, I lean back on the thought that I think starts a lot of the tricky tweets is that, well, it is true. It is my
life. Is true. And there's something to me. And I think that like, once you get a taste of
even if it's wrong, but once you've decided for yourself that maybe it's done something good, that feels so much more like I remember the first time I talked about having depersonalization displacement on anything and putting it out anywhere in the world. And I actually thought to myself, like afterwards, the next day, I was like, what if like a director listens to like a person that I'm pitching to? Like, what if someone hears it and is like, ooh, I don't want to work with this person. They crazy.
Yeah.
And so I did have that moment of like, oh, I can't take that back. And then I got like the first email that I got from a listener who was like, I can't believe someone's talking about this. I have that. It's so rare. I've never heard anyone acknowledge it and go on to say they were able to live with it, move past it to a certain degree. And I consider you to be successful, whatever that means to me. And so thank you. I was like, done. Fine. Great.
Was worth
fuck
it.
That person who doesn't want to work with me because I'm crazy. Fuck that person. That doesn't matter.
That straw that man person that you matters. Have
created. That's right. That fictitious, probably no one is going to bother but to ever have that feeling.
I will say, I think that when we start getting brave about it and also mindful about which things we're going to let out there, I have those feelings also for sure and have decided that, well, that's just getting me closer to the right place to be.
I agree.
All the people who won't work with me, somebody else is going to be even more excited to work with me.
Yeah.
That happened when I was writing on Fashion Police and we went on strike and I was like, oh my God, am I going to be known for being a problem? Am I going to be known for being, a troublemaker in a writer's room? Who's going to ever hire me again? This was my first professional job.
And it's like, it's hard. I'm a woman. It's hard enough. It's hard enough. And like, we're already conditioned as a sex to not be troublemakers.
Mm-hmm. But I was like, yeah, okay. But on the other side, I will be known for somebody who cares about this stuff and will take a stand for things. And the treatment of workers is important to me. And the next job I got was halfway because of that. I started working for Totally Biased as a correspondent and writer. And that it part of the selling point was like, oh, look, she made this funny video about Tyler Perry and she went on strike against E.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, that sounds right.
Yeah,
for our show. So, yeah. You know, it is scary, but it's, I think that's all part of learning that like saying no is very important.
Mm-hmm.
That you saying no to things, it feels scary because you're shutting doors and you're like, oh no, I'm not going to have this job now. I'm not going to have this opportunity, but it leaves you so much more space to go to the thing you do want to do.
Yeah.
Instead of being slogged down by all these other things you halfway wanted to do.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Like I compromised my some, even if it was just some, what at the time seemed like a minor representation of what I believed or what I didn't believe, but like those things kind of add up too. And so you sort of do, if you are the sum of those parts, you are like, am I the kind of person who does this? And no one's perfect. Like I've done plenty of things where I'm like, ah, you know what? It might have been nice to be on the right side of history on that one. You know what I mean? Like, it might have been nice to... I would have done exactly the same thing you did with a panda suit. Like, I absolutely, unequivocally would not have done it. But I can't say... And I'm not saying you are. But I can't say that it's like it would have ever been 100%. I just know this is wrong. It would have been like, oh, my cellulite. Oh, my this. Like, I don't want people to see that part of my body. You know what I mean?
Too, yeah.
But, you know, but so like it's not like I was like had some fierce bod and was like, yeah, everyone would be lucky to see my beautiful figure. But
yeah, no, it wasn't that at all. Like a lot of it was I don't want to show my it wasn't like I don't want to show my body on camera because I'm not getting paid correctly. And the contract wasn't there. It was no, I don't want to show my body on camera. That's just not ever a thing that I've wanted to do because that's not my.
But also like a lot of people. But then you sort of go, well, wait a minute. We're human beings. Like we're creatures. We have this like weird ethereal thing that no one really understands about our consciousness. But we're also monkeys. Like it's all a fucking mess anyway. We're just a big soupy mess of whatever it is that we are as a species. And a lot of stuff that happens that ends up being good for people does come down to just an insecure feeling or a feeling of like, you know, yeah, I wasn't making some grand gesture for humanity. All I could do was act based on something that made me uncomfortable. But it's like, yeah, but there's a reason that it made you uncomfortable. And part of the reason is that you're taught to feel that you don't have a cute butt if you don't have XYZ going. And like, mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute, I can expand that out to go, well, that's not really very cool. And then you kind of can sort of rise to the occasion of, You know, I can have this feeling that feels base and shameful, and it can still take me up the ladder to the place where you are. Your voice is important on the top of the pyramid for a change, or what have you.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the fact versus feelings thing, just because it's a feeling doesn't mean it's a fact, but feelings are their own very important thing that, we need to listen to. And I mean, now there's always been people that I'm like, I got a snaky feeling from them. Like, just, you know, the humans are like, programmed to be disgusted by snakes. Mm-hmm. Both the sound, because they can kill us.
Same with spiders, guys.
Yeah. But,
she said, trying to defend her fear of spiders, which is maybe less right.
But it's also the way that snakes move, because we can't understand how they move. It took scientists a very long time to figure out how snakes move.
Yeah.
Which is something that you don't even think. I was like, well, they do that slimy thing. And right. Then was like, oh, wait, how do they do that?
No, it's true. Yes, absolutely.
And there's certain people that I'm like, I don't know what you're doing, but you're creeping me out somehow. Mm-hmm. I just have a yuck feeling about you. Mm-hmm. And used to be like, well, that's some people. And maybe it's because I'm a weirdo. And now I'm like, I'm not a weirdo. Those people are bad. I'm staying away from them. If you give me a yuck feeling in my gut, I'm staying away from you. And it doesn't mean that I have to like go tell everybody that you're bad news, or start coming up with ideas of why I think you might be. That's all I need to know. You yuck me out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right thing to do.
Do you feel like, and this is truly, honestly, not me trying to like pry and get you to like admit something about someone who's been outed at all, but like, do you feel that you have later on, it's not that you pursued that truth, and it's not that, you know, but coincidentally you have found out, again, not in a public way, but like later on, it's
for
been
sure.
Like, okay, well, yeah,
absolutely.
So she said the same thing. Well, I guess I'm not wrong. Or hard. He said the same, you know what I mean? Or
it's
whatever.
Hard one. Yeah. That's for sure has happened both privately and publicly. Yeah. I've had people that I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's why I had that feeling. And there's another thing that I've been trying to write about, the idea of a different kind of beard that I think a lot of successful women with high status who are known as feminists, high status in their community, be it professionally, whatever, like a church, I guess, whatever community,
right.
Comedy for me. I think that sometimes there are predatory men who use women like me as a type of beard to sort of mask their creepiness, where they can be like, oh, see, I'm friends with Eliza, so she checks, she'll stand up for me. I mean, we've seen this happen with like Lena Dunham publicly, where she was like, I know my writer and he's a great guy. And then she rolled it back, and then more stuff came out about him in that case. And it was like, yeah, he maybe was using you as a little bit of a cover.
Yeah.
And what has brought that up for me in my personal life, the lesson that I had to learn was having friends that I think I know, and then hearing from another woman, very often a younger woman, a description of that person that is completely different, I'm like, oh no. And at first I used to be like, oh, well, maybe he just doesn't like you, and so he's showing a different side, or you guys just don't get each other. Cause that's not my experience with him. And then, and I'm not even saying like sexual assault or harassment stuff, just like a completely different picture of someone. And although sometimes assault or harassment.
Yeah.
And I finally had to start realizing like, oh, they are choosing to show you a certain face and choosing to show someone else another face. And whatever the quote unquote true face of that person is, there's somebody who switches back and forth.
Right.
And that's a little snaky.
Right.
That makes my gut feel gross.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have gained that instinct about people like that now.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's a better way for us to support each other as women. And that way I can listen to their stories, even when they're not what I want to hear.
Right.
When someone tells me something about someone I consider a friend, and it doesn't line up with what I know, instead of just instantly rejecting it, there's that option. There's, okay, you know what? Maybe I know only a certain thing that they've chosen for me to know.
Right. Is that the kind of situation where you would... have you found that would be a situation where the person that you have a relationship with feels meaningful enough that you would potentially
actually confront them with that? Or is it, does it tend to be people that whatever your relationship with them is, you realize as you're hearing this other person giving their account, like, yeah, you know what? I don't even feel like I want to talk about this with this person, which probably means she's right. Because yeah. I might feel a sense of, and maybe even defensiveness, like shame of like, well, I wouldn't be friends with someone who would do that. It's like, oh, this is even about me right now. Like I'm taking this personally because of how it reflects on me. Yeah. And can I put that aside and then listen and go, okay, well, the next step is like, do I love, do I feel a sense of love and respect and loyalty to this person to the point where now I've listened to it, now I've not made it about me, and now I'm going to go to that person and say, I'm really troubled by this? Or does it tend to suddenly be like, well, wait a minute, you know what? I don't even think it's worth having this conversation with this person.
Luckily, in so far for me, it's never been someone that I've been close enough to feel like that, but like
I'm wondering if that's a coincidence. It might not be. It might be like, yeah, you know what, as it turns out, I was always gonna have this person at this length away from me, because if it got any closer, I probably would have figured it out for myself.
Maybe But there are definitely people who, even far, like arm's length, I was like, no, that guy's great,
got it.
And now I'm like, oh, you've told me more about this person than I knew before.
Yeah,
it's not like I don't have to, it's like not deciding whether or not to believe, just believe people,
right?
Like they're not lying as often as we're kind of like taught to believe, even as women, that other women were lying about a lot of things, or that women had emotional reasons, that they were manipulating things.
And that's why the whole Aziz thing felt so dangerous too, is that many people were saying, it's if it dilutes something, if there's a dilution that happens, that's a word, right? Where other people are able to go, see, it could have just been a misunderstanding with all of these other situations that, you know, maybe were characterized in a different way that got everyone to be supportive. And that's where I understand people saying like, fuck nuance, that's dangerous right now. But at the same time, behind closed doors, I am like,
but I think that also, I think the answer there is, I think it's being able to share feelings and stories, that not feeling like we're not allowed to. And again, behind closed doors is a great place to do it. Like, we should
just be tying into our what do you post,
like, you don't lives forever. But you can have conversations, and behind closed doors can also be in DMs. Like, everything doesn't have to be totally public, but you can feel, I think that if you feel safe in a situation to tell someone your story and they can take it in and learn more, like basically with a lot of the Aziz stuff, I initially read it I'd had a couple glasses of wine. It was like 3 a.m. where I was. Yeah. I read it and was like, I don't know. And like tweeted something.
Like it was just a bad date.
Like a bad date thing, which also there is something I think important in that with, and I kept wanting to bring it up with different things that you've said, that we can choose and consent to have sex that we don't really want to have. And maybe in the moment we don't know that we don't want to have it. And I think that is somewhat empowering for men and women, but especially for women, because anytime you're telling a woman, this is the only type of sex you should have, that's not fair. Like, we should be allowed to experiment and try things out. What does it feel like when I have sex with someone that I have this kind of feeling about? Oh, not great. Right. I'm not going to do that again.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be necessarily traumatic.
Right.
If it is traumatic to, I mean, sometimes you got no idea what's going to be traumatic till you go through it. And, but I just feel like people should be allowed to make their own rules for their life and their body, as far as what they're the things that don't affect other people,
right,
or hurt other people. So I had a little bit of a complicated feeling about that, where I'm like, well, look, if she wanted to choose this stuff, then she's can do that.
That's the other gray area that's very confusing about this, all of this, which is important. It's growing pains. I think there's so much that's unpleasant for a lot of people right now. And I just keep telling myself, it's growing pains.
Yes.
It's going to have to feel like this. And that, you know, I don't have a kid, so I don't have the legacy of like, I want my daughter to da da da. But I do feel like, and I've said this before, and it's kind of become my, I feel like within the last calendar year, at least, like my number one thing is like, if someone looks back at me in my century and goes, what a terrible person, great,
because that means we've evolved past where I am right now.
Yeah.
If in 100 years someone goes, can you believe she wasn't in Africa administering vaccines every day she was on this earth? Mm-hmm. What a jerk.
We all do like, that.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. No, that just means we're better and we're taking better care of each other. I'm happy to go down as the asshole in history.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You said something earlier that reminded me of this also, that like, I think there's something really great in learning that you were wrong about something. You ended the day smarter than you started it.
Yeah.
And I think people are very scared because a lot of times it's not just, oh, hey, you're wrong. It's you're wrong. Drag her in the street.
Right.
So we got to
being
cool
wrong
that
doesn't
out.
Mean you're a villain every yeah. time.
And so we shouldn't treat people like they are.
Right.
But also you should be open to being wrong and being able to be improved and having your opinion improved. Again, like, so my initial Aziz reaction was like, eh, not a big deal.
Right.
And then I talked with some younger women and just a bunch of different women, some of whom were like even more on that side than me. But some of whom were like, well, no, this feels familiar to me and it feels very confusing to me. And I had to, and I realized I was looking at this story through my eyes of where I have been, which I wrote about this in the thing that in my post about it, that because it was so poorly written and so confusing and like too many facts about things we don't need facts about and not enough facts about things that we do, that people could only view it through their own point of view and process it that way. And so if you have had experiences like that and they were traumatic to you, then this feels very traumatic. And if you haven't, or you have had them but they didn't feel traumatic to you, then this feels like no big deal. And it's like, well, there's so many teeny tiny moving parts in all of that that can change the tone of a second.
Yeah.
So we can't do that. So, and that's why we can't write about things in such a slapdash way.
Right.
Because we can't leave it up to everybody's personal experiences.
Right.
We need to be like, oh, I understand what happened to her and I understand her perspective and I understand the situation. Okay. Now I know how I feel about it. Instead of, I kind of get it. Well, here's what happened to me. So.
Right, right, right.
But
if I had been there, I would have handled it this
way.
And yeah.
Me as a, you know, 30 something lady who's had such and such experiences already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that then talking to a bunch of women with other perspectives helped me kind of build a different perspective on it.
And also like pulled into focus this idea, as you brought up from the beginning when we first started talking about it, which is what about this unseen narrator who is the publication, who is the editor, who is the, you know, what about them and their responsibility in this? Because that's something that like my sweetie partner whatever gets very, very defensive and upset about is like he can't stand when there's bad journalism, which there is a lot of bad journalism, and he's like he feels maligned by that, and it's not dissimilar from how we feel when we are like lady, don't take my side. I'm not loving what you're saying about women right now, and I know that you feel that you're advancing a cause, but I feel that you're diminishing it. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea of like, we don't need more irresponsible journalists out there. We don't need more irresponsible publications out there because it's really tainting what it means to tell a story anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the fact that they're very young on that staff and so proud of that, I'm like, yeah, that's a... You're losing a lot of experience and perspective.
Yeah.
That was also why. So I saw a lot of the discussions include elements of women saying, well, she should know better. These younger women they should know better. And I was like, okay, if we know better, supposedly, than they do, then it's our job to tell them things.
Right.
And it's our job to not point our fingers at other ladies, but like, in this sense, it's a good thing, I think, to think of it. Think of yourself. When you were younger, what was that like for you? And most, I think, older women with this perspective are like, oh, I was a ding dong. And I would go home with a famous man and think, we've been texting all week. Maybe he's in love with me. Maybe we're going to kiss all night and he's going to tell me I'm so pretty and we're going to talk about our favorite records.
Yeah.
And the next day we're going to get brunch together and this is the beginning of something. Wow.
Yeah.
And each moment that it's turning out to not be that, if that's something that's very meaningful to you, again, at that age where your priorities are very different than they will be later in those terms, you keep trying to hold on to it. And so, yeah, she probably would stay. But again, I'm only processing this through me, but I'm trying to find the areas where I can see why it's upsetting to her and to the other women that I know who've been upset by it. Right. Because yeah, so I did this thing on Twitter where I asked, women over 30, what's something that you wish you had known when you were in your 20s? And it got such an amazing response. It's like one of the, like, I did very little for it, but it's one of the things that I'm kind of most proud of right now. Because the way people talk to each other was so kind and nice. And the way they talked about themselves was so nice. Like hearing them be so nice to the younger version of themselves.
Yeah.
And then having younger women be like, oh my God, thank you. Nobody told me any of these things. Or I was doubting some of this stuff, and reading all this was really important to me, just from other women, and sometimes from women who are like people that I really respect and already know their careers and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like there was more of, in my imagination, I've never been a man. In my imagination, there's more of that in their world of like mentoring younger men and not necessarily seeing them, because women have a supposed expiration date on our usefulness. I think that there has been an inherent distrust of younger women.
Yeah.
And when I was younger, I distrusted older women because I was surrounded by men who were telling me I was fascinating. I was fascinating. I was the best. I was so funny. I was so good at everything. You're a star. You're amazing. And then there would be some older woman who's like, I got notes. And I'm like, oh, she's threatened. And now as an older woman who has been in a position to help younger women to produce them as on TV as talent, I'm like, no, I do. I can tell you things that they're not telling you, because even if they don't know it, they're trying to fuck you. Like they've got a thing in their guts. Some of them are keyed into it and try to push it down. Some of them aren't. And it's just infiltrating the conversation in all kinds of ways. I don't have that. I'm only trying to make this TV show better. I'm only trying to make this show better. And if we're friends, I'm only trying to like offer you an idea for your set if you want it.
Yeah.
And so it's not as, so when I was younger, it didn't feel as like laudatory as I was used to. So it felt like an attack. It wasn't an attack.
Yeah.
And so I would love for there to be more ways for women of different ages to support each other. Younger women are the ones who need to be saying, I don't think this woman is expired at 45. I still want to see her on TV. I still want to read her books. I still want her voice out there.
Right.
And older women need to be the ones talking to younger women, being like, I get some of this that's going on with you, not all of it, but here are some things that I learned that might help you navigate it, so that you can take them if you want or not.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I think that kind of relationship has helped men a lot, and it's our turn to have that also.
I agree. And again, I do feel that like we are seeing more of that. I mean, I can't. And again, I'm not Catherine Deneuve. I'm not Meryl Streep. I'm not any of these women who, you know, the Helen Mirrens. Like, I'm not any of these women who have remained, you know, relevant to a culture that supposedly throws our women away. And I'm sure, I mean, for all of those people, there are plenty of people who go, whatever happened to, but there's also like a sense of, but then like, we could have a whole episode on like how immaterial fame is, because that's a whole thing too, is like this idea now, having done this as long as I do now, when someone's like, whatever happened to, you know, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio or whatever, I think she came back and started working again. But anyway, but now I'm at a place where I'm like, oh, there is nothing more dignified than if it's right for you saying, I'm through with this.
Deborah Winger.
Doesn't have to be because it's awful. It doesn't have to be because no one wants you anymore. It doesn't have to be because you want to raise a family or horses. It can just be like, and now I want to go teach because I want to give this to someone else. Or now I want to of course, all of those things are viable, but it doesn't have to say anything inherent about the business, and we don't have to keep reinforcing that by thinking that it does.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I am sensitive to reinforcing it, because, yeah, I don't think that it's actually as true as people want, but I do think it's something that we use to scare women.
Yeah.
And I think that if that was something that was important to younger women, it would diffuse that bomb.
Yeah.
Like you'd have no ammo to scare people if you had people saying, oh, actually, I feel the opposite of that, so everybody go back to work and write another TV show or book or whatever you're trying to make. Because that's a valuable perspective. I just don't like I don't like the way that people try to that society tries to scare women. And I think that by sharing different perspectives, we can say like, hey, it's actually not that scary here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that scary.
And it'll be even less scary when you come. Come here and be less scared with us. And yeah, that's, you know, I was just, as you were saying that, I realized like, that's kind of what, that's so dumb to be like, hey, I got a little like a sound bite, but I feel like in my mind, as you were saying that, this word popped in my head in neon letters, which was progressive. Mm-hmm. And I just realized right now that's how I want to feel, because I feel that being progressive allows for anger about what hasn't worked. And it allows for that like energy and that rocket fuel to push you out of that. But it also is very optimistic. It's progressive. Yes. It's about progress. Yeah. It's about taking it forward. And that is inherently optimistic. And so that's the kind of cocktail that I feel like we just need to keep working on. It's never going to be perfect, but it's like and it's going to be different for everyone. What's my right balance of motivation and resentment?
Yeah.
Some people it might
agree.
Be a pinch and all optimism, or they won't advance to where they want to be and bring everyone up around them too. And for other people, it might be like, you know what, from what I went through in my life, I'm 90% pissed, 10% excited, and I'm going to bring all these great women with me who feel differently, and we're all going to be powerful.
I totally agree. I feel like so much of my comedy voice, everything is like, I just want to make things better. And I think of it like, it's kind of like if you started working out, if you started going to a gym, if you were super out of shape, you can't start working out if you're just sitting around being like, oh, I'm so out of shape. This is terrible. And you also can't go to a gym and be like, I'm in shape now. I'm going to do all the hard stuff.
Right.
You have to be like, okay, here's where I'm at and there's where I want to get. And so how do we do this?
Yeah.
We can do this.
Yeah.
And just try to improve and keeping your eyes on the prize is really important, because there's so many chances to get so angry along the way at things that don't matter.
Right.
At like, personal, how dare you, injustices, you can't talk to me that way. Yeah, you know what, that guy, that person, you're not going to fix. I got to stay focused on this thing that I want, this thing that I want to say, this thing that I want to do, and once I do that, that's the revolutionary act.
Yeah,
more than teaching some ding dong who thought that wants to make fun of me for not wearing enough makeup at an audition or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, all right,
pick your battles is very true in that regard, especially if you're somebody who's hypersensitive. Like, I know for me, it took me a long time, and it's still something I have to tell myself all the time, like a muscle that you exercise, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, which is, oh, I don't have the emotional bandwidth to make that a priority. Mm-hmm. And everything in me instinctually, for whatever reason, might be like, here's a night of sleep you're going to lose, and mm-hmm. you should lose it because that ding dong, you know what I mean? And then being like, oh wow, I can't take that on at all, and I'm not doing it. And in Mike, and you know what? I hope someone else does, and bless them, and thank you. And I can't do that. For me to get to that end goal, which hopefully is going to make things better in some way, I got to just walk away from that and go, don't have time for that. Yeah. I can't stop every time along the way, or I'm never going to get there.
Yeah, and also like in the example that I gave, like you can be like, hey, don't like that, bye.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get my car.
Yeah.
Instead of like,
it doesn't mean
I
you have
don't
to
like
be
that.
Like,
change it right now in front of me.
And like, also instead of being like, uh-huh, sounds good, and not saying anything.
Yeah.
What's that, finding the, you can speak your mind and then move on.
I remember years ago being on tour with a short form improv group, and we did a college show, and the college improv troupe wanted to meet us afterwards. And this one dude in the troupe, like big muscly guy, I don't need to say that. Anyway, he was like, oh man, you are so fun. You're so funny. And it's so hard to find funny women. Like, I don't mean to be sexist. I'm not being sexist. It's just, it's hard to find funny women. And by the way, this improv group that he was meeting me with, there was a girl in the group right there next to him. And so he's like, I don't mean to be sexist. It's just hard to find funny women or funny girls. And I was like, oh no, that is sexist. And he was like, what? And I was like, no, that's sexist. That's sexist. There are girls out there. Thank you. Thanks for coming to the show. But you can definitely find girls out there. But saying something like that is sexist. And the rest of my group was looking at me like, oh shit. but I was like, look, I'm not mad at him. Just again, the fact there is that is a sexist thought.
And you're wrong.
Yeah. And
hopefully, I'm saying it in a way that's not going to make you hate me and be defensive about yourself
and dig your heels
in.
Just
like, go find out how wrong you are.
Yeah.
And be excited to be wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you don't mean to be sexist, then I'm going to trust that you are open-minded enough to stop being this way.
Exactly. That this, I just did you a favor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, I wrote a thing online that like, it's like being told you have stuff in your teeth.
I'd rather know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I think the flip side of that is when you tell someone they have stuff in their teeth, you don't go, hey, dumb, dumb.
Yeah.
Look at you with the spinach in your teeth.
Yeah.
That was stupid of you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you didn't know this. You have spinach in your teeth.
Yeah. I think anything like that is, it never hurts to, and I do feel that my approach tends to be, I'm only telling this to you because I would want to know. Like, just immediately personalize it between two people. Like, you may not even wish that I'd said something.
Yeah.
But I would want to know. So all I can do is come from that place.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you know that, like, you're out for someone's good rather than to humiliate them on some level, you know?
Yeah. And they trust your intent. Too. They're like, this person's not trying to humiliate me or make me feel bad. They're trying to make things better for me.
Yeah.
So it's easier for them to hear it too.
Oh God, this has been very inspiring. I'm not finishing with the MASH game, guys. The unprecedented ending from hundreds of episodes. I can say hundreds because it's been over 200, but it still feels a little bit like I'm pushing it. Thank you so much. This is exactly what I wanted.
Oh, good.
It's exactly what I wanted.
Thank you for having me.
I just love talking to you. And,
likewise.
And guys, I will. So I guess that's my, and also, by the way, I think I've said this before, but like every time I say, hey guys, at the beginning of my podcast, I always think of like the couple of women who have been like, you know, your address. It as if all your listeners are men. I'm like, I can't, now I'm the old fogey that's like, it's gone past that now. I'm not picturing that when I say it. I understand. And I know that like Rhea and Cameron will be like, hey guys, like they sort of have adapted some stuff to kind of be more feminist. And that is probably not going to be the thing that I hang my hat on, but, but I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, all people.
Yeah, we need more words. We need more words. We need more genderless pronouns.
Yeah.
And we need more familiar people terms.
Agreed. Yeah, that was a whole other... I really will let you go, but that could be a whole other episode, is just the conversation about kind of... just this idea of like, I don't know, the whole idea, like I completely understand and empathize with people who are reluctant to take on the transgender issues because they feel... I guess like it's just one more goddamn thing. I mean, that's what I think people who are people who consider themselves progressive, mm-hmm. but who are like, but I mean, come on, every snowflake doesn't have to be, you know what I mean? Like, oh, mm-hmm. I never like, I may not remember to say theirs instead of, you know, his or whatever. And I understand that because I understand it from well-intentioned people who are like, it's just one more goddamn thing. In their mind, it's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to offend someone. It's just a new way for me to hurt someone's feelings. I understand that. But by the same token, in my mind, I just keep thinking like, why do you think it's like, there's someone over in the trans world who's like, I love being called them.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's just nothing that works right now.
Yeah.
It's a growing pain.
Yeah.
No one is that. I don't know a single trans person who is excited about a genderless pronoun.
Yeah.
Or just an asexual person or a person, you know, a person who's not identifying as either.
Yeah.
They're just like, they're not like, that's perfect for me.
Yeah.
It's like, we're a mess.
Yeah.
We're a mess and we're just doing the best we can
right now.
And also
when people have a problem with that stuff, I'm like, do you have a problem when someone tells you that you're pronouncing their name wrong?
Yeah.
Are you like, actually, it's Elizabeth. Like,
yeah.
No, come on.
Yeah.
It's just polite.
I apologize. I have been calling you Eliza, Eliza Skinner this whole time.
But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but I am excited about the idea of a genderless singular pronoun.
I am too.
Because like, that's something that should have been where we started from language wise.
Yeah.
Like we started from you guys get one word, you guys get another word. That's too much work right out of the gate.
Yeah.
It should have just been some sort of people word. And then if people are like, hey, you know what? I'm kind of fancy. I want a girl people word.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm the type of fancy that I want a man people word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys get words with hats on them.
I would be on board with that.
But
also like, I'm really interested to see how this, I recognize again, it's changed and so it could scare people, but
when I look back on the child that I was, I think I honestly really would have benefited from being more genderless. Like, I felt more genderless than I was allowed to be.
Oh, I was super genderless.
You know what
as
I mean? And I so
like
I think that's
tomboy.
Really exciting. Like, if I could have just felt like I didn't have to, that I wasn't one or the other, I think that kind of would have been amazing.
Yeah. I have had hard times relating to this, the trans community movement. It's not a movement, it's just like a revelation, sort of.
Sure, there you go.
Because I grew up so kind of genderless. Like, I was very much a tomboy. I hung out with most of the other kids in my neighborhood were boys. Not all of them, but most of them. And I wasn't hyped on dresses, but I also didn't feel trapped. I did feel trapped in a lot of them. They don't make them well. They don't move with you. Mm-hmm. Especially the fancy ones.
Yeah.
But, and so I had to, it's one of the things where I had to step back and like really listen and be like, okay, that isn't the experience that a lot of these people are coming from. And so for them, gender is something that needs to be pushed back against hard.
Right.
And if I had come from that sort of situation, then yeah, I might have that same perspective. And so I have to help them with their pushing back, and if they need me to in some way, or just get out of the way for it.
And if the side effect is that, because the other thing is like this the whole idea that like there are people in the middle of the country, and listen, again, there are people on this coast who feel that way, so it's totally shitty of me to like blame it on the flyover states. Like, that would have disrespectful flyover states don't exist. That's not a thing. That's not a real thing. It's this awful coaster thing to say.
It's Coke drinkers and Pepsi drinkers. We know that's the divide.
It's as simple as that. But like if this potentially as of right now, not an incredibly large group of people who are afraid of it would have you think it's the beginning of the end of everything as we know it. Right now it's not, maybe it will be someday. But if the worst thing that comes out of that is that our whole relationship to gender and the way it functions in society gets a major overhaul, that ain't bad.
Yeah.
That ain't bad. We got a lot of problems based around female versus male.
Yeah, exactly.
So if everything becomes more ambiguous, great.
Yeah.
Great. That's not threatening. I'm not saying any woman has to stop wearing lipstick and a dress. I love wearing lipstick and dresses some days. Love it. No one's saying we're going to take that away from you. And no one's saying a man can't wear,
exactly.
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't call it a wife beater, but...
Or lipstick and a dress.
Or lipstick and a dress.
I mean, one thing that I think is really unfair is that women get to play with man clothes all the time.
Oh,
doesn't bat an eye. I could go to work in a suit.
Yeah.
They'd think I look snappy.
Yeah.
Men can't like dabble in femininity.
And I
at
really
least the
want
way
that.
They present.
I
and
do really want that.
Or they have to
I could use a lot more painted nails. I could see a lot more guys in skirts. I think it's wonderful.
Even back in the 80s when we had that like pirate movement. I want to like blame Adam Ant for.
Yeah.
And
Boy
thank
George
him for.
And like, oh, I do miss the male makeup of the 80s.
Yeah.
I truly
where
do.
It was
Duran
like,
Duran.
Okay, here are ways that we can get ruffles and silks and laces, and it still feels masculine to us, but we're playing with the femininity of this masculinity.
Yes.
And it's a way, like, it's just a way that we get to dabble again, that they don't get to dabble. So it's a bigger leap.
It might be right around the corner, because when you look at what's going on politically in the 80s, it's like, oh, of course, if that was a response to the sort of weird button-down Reagan era, coming out of like the looser, you know, like, because so much about the 80s was tight. And so when you look at some of those alternative movements, it's like, well, maybe we're about to get a lot more Adam Ants out there, which, by the way, he has one of the best looks I've ever seen. Going with that, like, British fop, but then, like, sort of, and again, this is inappropriate for me to say, but semi-tribal makeup, which, again, maybe he didn't have the right to put on. Mm-hmm. But at the time,
in
the context in which it was presented, I was like, that is the coolest look I've ever seen to see a superhero or what? What's happening?
I mean, essentially, he was wearing a bunch of makeup.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
And Duran really caked it on.
Mm-hmm.
I love Nick. I always went for the guys that wore the most makeup. I was like, Nick Rhodes is the straightest, hottest guy in Duran.
Oh, yeah.
He was the one with the most like half pink, half blue, iridescent fucking eyeshadow. I'm ready for it.
Yeah. I would love that. I hope you're right.
Let's stay progressive, everybody. That's our challenge. That's our goal. We're all going to go out there and be progressive. Eliza, thank you again. We just had like a separate podcast episode that I said we weren't going to do. And I'll talk to you guys next time on the podcast.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.